Yeah, there's this. Those two handouts that different individuals have dropped off. I think it's who's that from? Excuse me? I think the youth are excused. I think they're no longer. I think they're done. From what I was told. And I believe everybody is present except for Supervisor Gruley is the only one that is not present.
Okay. So you got that mileage
sheet that I had? I signed it, but I didn't. Somebody else take it. Let me see if I can put it in my. Let me see, I might have it right here. Yes, I have it right here. So just what do you usually do? Just cross.
Here, just cross off
the list a little bit. Everybody else is present.
Yep.
Oh, the youth are still. Is this your last meeting? Regarding the youth, I wasn't sure if they were showing up today or what.
I think there's one more after this.
Okay.
Maybe two. I think May we do it also. I'm not sure. Thanks.
Okay. First thing up is citizens' comments. Any citizen wishing to make a comment, please step forward and state your name and give your address. And the comments will be limited to 3 minutes.
Fred Storrs, 1812 36th Street. I'm here as a member of the employees of the jail. First, I'd like to thank you for putting us on the agenda and listening to our issues. We also like you to know that the jail employees expect no special treatment. We just want to be treated fairly. The other units whose contracts expired at the end of the year, the highway department and the pros, were allowed to keep their paid holidays. Only the jail had them taken away. All other county employees received 10 paid holidays this year and always have. This also includes 3 new positions that were created in the Sheriff's Department. They also received their 10 paid holidays. I passed everybody a little packet. I just want to kind of show you what's in it and we can go through it together. The first sheet, it says county policies at the top. If you go on the county website and you get a listing of all the county policies, it shows on there the 2012 county holidays. The next page in the little packet that's stapled together is actually what appears on that page. If you see where I highlighted it, it says that this is to all county employees. This was also emailed to everyone. It's been posted in every building in the county. So all county employees, I would assume, should be able to get these 10 paid holidays. If you go about halfway down where I highlighted in yellow, detention employees are even included in the memo. So obviously the intent was that we would receive 10 paid holidays just like everybody else would receive. The reason it's at Veterans Day is that Veterans Day was always a jail holiday. We didn't get the day after Thanksgiving. We got Veterans Day instead. Pages 2 and 3 are kind of self-explanatory. They're a letter from a CO downtown that takes you a little more in depth into the difference between our new schedule and our old schedule. And it shows how, that no matter how you figure it out, we agree that the days are built into the schedule. We're not working those 10 days. The difference now is every day that we're off is not a paid day. So I'm not getting paid for the 10 holidays that everyone else is. The next page is a 2011 schedule. That's the old schedule we used to work. It's the 6-2, 6-2, 6-2. In addition to this schedule, we were then allowed 10 holidays a year. We took at our choice once a month from January to October. That was an additional day off in addition to the shaded days, which we were paid for. The next page is this year's schedule. Again, the shaded days are unpaid days that we're off. This schedule makes no allowance for me to get compensated for the extra 10 days off. I now work more hours this year than I worked last year, yet my compensation was reduced by 8 days, and I did not get the 10 paid holidays. The last sheet I gave you, that wasn't separated, explains on the county's side of what a paid holiday is. It's in that middle section. If I can have just one more minute?
3 minutes.
Go ahead.
The jail only asks that the pay for the 10 holidays be reinstated until the time when the county board decides that there are no more paid holidays. Whenever jail administration is asked about jail holidays, the standard answer is that they are figured in the schedule. While we don't argue that the days are figured in the schedule, every day off in that schedule is an unpaid day. I hope that between what little bit of information I've given you and any questions you need me to answer later, I have shown you that this is not true. We are not getting paid for those holidays. That the majority of the jail staff does not get paid holidays. We would please like you to be able to get us on the agenda so that the entire county board can take a look at this thing and vote on it one way or another. You should be making that decision whether all the employees get holidays or only some of the employees get holidays. Thank you for listening.
I have a proposal. I work at the jail downtown. I also gave you just one page synopsis that I put together a little bit about the
your address.
4120 87th Street, 53142. And it's pretty self-explanatory. Talks about the difference between the new 5242 schedule and the previous schedule. It provides no holiday compensation for the employees. Instead, it produces 8 short work weeks where we only get paid 72 hours rather than 80 hours. It affects the employees adversely up to $1,800 apiece. That, along with the WRS contribution and the vacation and personal time losses that most employees incurred, talks about up to a 10.6% reduction in wages from last year. The short work weeks, 2 per quarter, always fall when the employees have their weekends off. So in order to make up, they want us to make up those lost time days working at straight time on a weekend, and we only get weekends, 2 actual Saturday and Sundays, once per quarter. And it's not fair to the employees to have to work there once per quarter weekends in order to make up their 80 hours pay. The correctional division has continued to operate at a peak efficiency, and we generate a lot of income for the county, and we will continue to do this. We realize that the legislative mandates as well as the law of state revenue place a tremendous burden on the county board fiscally. But we would like you to base this on our performance, the past, present, and the future. And I also put down a possible solution on there would be to possibly make up the difference on that short work week for the people. That would create no overtime, make it 80 hours paid for those 72-hour weeks. Would not increase any cost per overtime and no additional days off for the employees. If you get an opportunity, take a look at it. Thank you for your time.
Any other citizens wish to make a comment?
Anthony Molinaro, 6906 49th Avenue. I also work for the Sheriff's Department in the Detention Center, and I would like to reiterate what my co-workers have just said. We're shorted 8 days of pay. Understandably, we are not looking for additional days off. I agree with what Captain Valduto and I had spoken with on a couple occasions, that the days off are built into our schedule. The compensation isn't. You know, we sat in a few meetings earlier in the year when things were going differently with the union contracts and Act 10 coming through, and this board, as well as the Finance Committee, all sat there and stated that we want to treat people fairly. That was the word that was used on numerous occasions. And we're not being treated fairly. All we're looking for is to equalize us with the rest of Kenosha County. You know, I work Christmas, I work New Year's Eve, I work New Year's Day, I work Christmas Eve, I work them all when the rest of the county was off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Or was it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday? They were off 4 days. They had 2 4-day weekends, and they got paid for 4 out of the 8 days. I was at work. I was working, and I didn't get compensated at any point in time after that. That's all we're looking for. Be fair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, and I'm not going to take up too much of your time. My name's Ed Sadlowski. I'm on staff with the Council 40, Wisconsin American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And just to let you know, this is my new turf, I'm privileged to say, in a very short time.
Could you give me your address, please?
I'm sorry, 4400 North Juniper Lane, Janesville. So I'm really glad I made the drive over. Wanted to stop in Lake Geneva and hang out on the beach, but that's another story. In a very short period of time, just getting to know folks this evening and the issue that they're confronted with at work, it's become real obvious to me how proud and determined they are of their job and the work that they do each day. And I think, as Brother Anthony was talking about, this notion of fundamental fairness really permeates every part of what I've been listening to for the last hour. So also confident, again, because of their, I guess, their view of this body and the county board itself, that this will get corrected, just given the history and the working relationship that existed here for a long time, decades, right, before what everybody's been confronted with. So just going to say stay the course if, you know, this notion of fundamental fairness and getting this taken care of. Jailers particularly, the service that they provide, I think we all know that. And last thing we want is a bunch of folks walking around for 3-4 months in fear and morale. And, you know, this kind of stuff starts to take a dip. It creates a very unhealthy environment. So just trying to give you some encouragement and say thanks for letting me appear here before you. And I look forward to getting to know everybody better and helping to solve some other problems. Thank you.
Did you take Nick's place?
Yes, Nick's practice in law in Chicago with a labor law firm. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Donna Dickinson, 7522 12th Avenue, president of Local 990 Clerical, and also the Jail Association and the Professional Association. I sat through most of the meetings that the county board had for the budget hearings and listened to everything that the sheriff's department had to say about their schedules, about the overtimes, but also the revenue that the sheriff's department has generated for the county. When the jailers brought it to my attention about the unpaid holidays, they're right. It's not fair. The clerical staff, the professional staff, we get paid those holidays. And I know what the new work schedule that they have implemented. They do get the day off as a holiday, but they're not compensated for that. And I do think, in all fairness, to our jailers who do provide a very vital part for this county, they do help generate a lot of money for our county, that they need to be compensated fairly for that. They work hard. They're dedicated individuals. And at this point, we're just asking to have the county board relook at the sheriff's department budget, what was presented to you on the county board by the sheriff's department, the sheriff, and take a look at that, because I'm just really questioning whether the full county board was aware that at the time that they were voting, whether they were voting that the county employees not be compensated for the holidays, at least the jailers, when the other county staff has been compensated. So if we could move forward and have some discussion tonight, we have plenty of jailers here to answer questions, and then hopefully get it on the full county board so some discussion can happen. Thank you.
Any additional citizens wish to make a comment? Hearing none, citizens' comments is closed at 6:45. Next up is supervisor comments. Any supervisors wishing to make a comment? Supervisor Singer.
Yeah, on this issue that was presented by some of the public, I had at no time understood that they were not going to get paid for their holidays. But they continued to get paid for that. I thought there was just a situation where there wasn't enough hours and that they could work additional hours. to make up the difference, but that wasn't explained to us that they weren't actually getting paid for holidays, and that's why I want a full explanation from the Sheriff's Department.
That's correct. That's why
The other thing I wanted to say is it really looks different in front of the courthouse there. With those trees down, it doesn't look the same at all. It's like a war zone. So, I mean, it's a beautiful building, but the trees did add to it. I hope we're going to be putting trees back there. So, that's all I got to say right now.
The only thing I'm going to say is I'm looking forward to what's now director explaining exactly what happened, because I'm the same opinion as Dave. I thought that would have built that into their office. Period.
Supervisor Bob?
No.
Okay, I thought you were going to answer the question. Any youth wish to make a comment? Supervisor comments and youth comments is closed. 6:46. Chairman comments just briefly. I'd like to thank the members of the jail staff that are here. Also, Mr. Riedel for coming to taking time out to be here to give us some explanation of what is actually going on. I know we all have been receiving emails from different county employees from the jail staff with this concern, and I felt just like the majority of this committee getting those emails and hearing different views from county employees that this needs to be brought to this committee's attention so we can be informed of actually what has transpired and the budget ramifications and things like that. I think it's important. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I know terms are coming to an end. I know Supervisor Haas has not sought re-election. This will be his. We probably will have one more meeting. I will not be attending. But I'd like to thank all of you for all the service. I've been on this committee for the last 8 years. 6 years I've been the chairman. I think this committee has made some great moves implementing a lot of things, especially out at KCDC. We added additional cells so that we couldn't have the federal inmates. We did a lot of great things on this county board to generate revenue and to create more jobs in this community. So I think, at least in the last 8 years, I'm very satisfied with what has transpired in this room with this committee. And I think this board is headed in the right direction. And I'd just like to thank all of you. Next up at 6:48 is the approval of, we're going to do both of them, I believe, together, the January 11th and the February 7th minutes. Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who seconded that?
First up is a resolution from the Division of Emergency Management. The resolution is to approve the appointment of, I'm going to try to pronounce it right, Douglas James, is it McElmer? To serve as a member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee. I do not know if he is present.
I can comment on that.
Standing room.
Well, that's it.
I go now. I'm sorry, I didn't hear which one was up first.
We were doing the first one. Is it
Mr. McElmory?
McElmory.
Okay. These are resolutions that.
Or do you want to do both of them together, or how do you?
We can. If it's
the
time.
Okay. The appointment of Mark William. Is it Niederer?
Niederer
to serve as a member of the Local Emergency Planning Committee.
These resolutions, in turn, are a matter of formality that the county executive has appointed Mr. Niederer and Mr. I think it's McElmory. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to them. I don't even know if they're here tonight. But anyway, this was prepared by Lieutenant Van Tine, who is the Director of Emergency Management for the county. He couldn't be here tonight, so I'm presenting them for him. And these are the county executive's appointments to serve on the Local Emergency Planning Committee. due to the fact that two people, there are two vacancies that have opened up. One is Paul Gilbert, who was representing the county chiefs, and he retired. And it escapes me who the other one was, but I think I have it. Don Holland, who has either resigned or from the board. And these are two appointments by the county executive to replace those two individuals on the board. The terms go until 2015.
I know both of these individuals for years. I think they're both very fine, upstanding citizens. I'd make a motion that we approve both of these.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Just reviewing their applications, I know we have Mr. Montgomery is the Pleasant Prairie Fire, he's the interim fire chief, and I know what their schedules and things like that, and looking at their involvement in the community, both of them have extensive ties, very active in the community, so I mean, usually individuals are here, but under these circumstances, I don't think that should be a major issue, and I also would approve their the resolutions for the appointment of these two individuals. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passed unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up is a resolution from the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department, 2012, the Multi-Jurisdictional Drug Task Force Grant for Southeastern Area Drug Operations, also known as CDOG.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sergeant Urquhart, supervisor of the Kenosha Drug Operations Group, presenting the resolution here for acceptance of the 2012 Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance Award. It is for a multi-jurisdictional task force known as CDOG, which consists of Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, Dodge, and Jefferson County. The total amount of the award is $211,792. Our portion of that is $53,140. Just requesting a modification of the 2012 expenditure and revenue budgets for the drug unit to account for our share of this grant. We are also one of the sponsoring agencies, or one of the agencies that would be responsible for the reporting and the reimbursement of this program.
Move to approve.
It's been moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Passed unanimously.
Thank you, John.
Is this the
Yes, it is.
Next up is the Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance, the Live Scan Replacement Upgrade Grant.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the resolution before you is to accept $13,600 in grant money from the Wisconsin Office of Justice Assistance to assist Kenosha County with the upgrading of the Live Scan replacement. Live Scan is our electronic fingerprinting and data storage system that is also in the jail, as well as joint services. This equipment is used on a daily basis. We were able to get some funding towards our system, which is from 2001 and needs to be replaced. There is no match on this grant, and I would ask for your approval.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next up is a request to suspend competitive bid process to purchase replacement electronic fingerprinting equipment and installation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is the other half of the first resolution that you just heard. In spending that grant money, we do plan on upgrading the live scan equipment this year. In looking at the equipment available to upgrade our current system with, we were able to determine through our research that replacing our current MorphoTrack system with anything other than a new MorphoTrack system would cause great problems within both the jail and the Joint Services Identification Bureau. The state uses Morpho, which, when we use Morpho, allows for better tracking of information. The KPD uses equipment that is Morpho.
Power surge.
Power surge. Must be fixing the air handlers. The Kenosha Police Department is also purchasing Morpho-based equipment, which will work better with the Morpho system. This will also save training dollars and allow both Joint Services and Kenosha County Sheriff's Department to more effectively use the live scan equipment to the betterment of the county. I'd ask for your approval of this resolution.
Moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
So there's nobody else that can provide this. Is this why you're asking for this?
No. There are other vendors out there. However, the state uses Morpho. One of the problems with not going with Morpho is if you have something other than Morpho, you can get one dump of information from the state a year. If you use Morpho, you can get dumps every day. You can continuously upgrade and have current information. If you want more than that one dump a year, then you have to pay additional dollars for it. So it actually becomes less cost effective down the road.
Any questions?
And there's not multiple vendors for Morpho. It's just one vendor.
Right.
All in favor? Aye. Passed unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up at 6:57 is discussion regarding jailer schedules and holidays. And I just want to thank Mr. Riedel for coming.
It's always a pleasure. Hi, everybody. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I've asked Captain Paul Falluto, who is captain in charge of detentions, to join me up here. 5242 schedule, which is at the core of the discussion for tonight, is a schedule that was developed and is managed by the Sheriff's Department, and Paul is really far more capable of this, of explaining its management particulars to you than I am. So I do that. I'm also passing out a document which will be referred to shortly. To give perspective historically, I know all of you remember a meeting we had on July 26th on the third floor in which we discussed a response to the state budget cuts and how the county, and in this case the sheriff as well, was going to respond to those cuts. You'll remember the Wisconsin Act 10 dissolved two contracts, Local 70 and Local 990J, and it dissolved two others on the first of this year. And so what it did is shifted the source of recovery from cuts in the state budget to our employees' wages and benefits. And the number of employees that were directly affected numbered less than half, slightly less than half, but less than half. You'll also remember that what we had to do was cut the employees' pension contribution. We worked on increasing the health care costs that are passed on to the employees. That was to the tune of $1 million. And then we proposed overtime changes. And the short version of the proposal was we proposed overtime changes that were consistent with federal standards as identified by the Fair Labor Standards Act. And for the jailers, the group that we're discussing tonight, it meant what we called a 7K plan. That was 171 hours over 28 days, triggered overtime at time and a half. The meeting that we had on the third floor on the 26th and a subsequent meeting, which involved full participation by many of you, by my office, by Nick Kasner, by the jail union and Local 70 as well. There was a lot of discussion about the overtime changes that had been proposed in order to recover from the state budget cuts. And during a discussion about a 40-hour work week and a time and a half after 40 hours, the sheriff approached the committee, the finance admin, that night and said that he would be happy to maintain the 40 if you would be allowed to develop an alternative that would save the same amount of money that we were going to save from introducing federal standard overtime into all county employees. And so we developed the 5-2-4-2 schedule. It was presented to during the budget, and it was passed. If you will look at the policy, page 17 from the policy book, you will see that what was passed by the board was an opportunity to allow the sheriff to see how the 5-2-4-2 schedule would work. It says that the board would grant a year for the analysis, and it would be introduced instead of that overtime concession that I've already discussed. You also see the sheriff's department's managing it in full compliance with FLSA. 5-2-4-2 is patterned after the deputy sheriff's schedule. Deputy sheriffs do not have paid holidays. They have a very similar schedule to what has been introduced, and Captain Feldwood will identify the differences for you. It reduces overtime through scheduling. It is compliant with the law, and it saves about the same amount of money that would have been saved had 7K been implemented with fair labor standards. What is allowed under the Fair Labor Standards Act? With your permission, I'd like Captain Feltigo to explain how 5-2-4-2 works and how it is effective in saving that money.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the sheriff came up with a 5-2-4-2 schedule in response to the 171-hour overtime. How that schedule works is that an employee works 5 days on, 2 days off, then they have a week where they work 4 days on, 2 days off. It rotates through the year, and because of that, there are approximately 8, less for some day off groups, more for others because of where the day off group starts at the beginning of the year. But on average, it causes 8 weeks a year where the employee works 32 hours instead of 40 hours. That was anticipated ahead of time. The sheriff had me write policy to allow correctional guards who wanted to make up those 8 hours the ability to work an 8-hour overtime shift. In fact, they would have preference in working that 8-hour overtime shift. We also allowed our ARS division, our booking division, and our kitchen division to create shifts if there wasn't enough overtime available should an employee want to shift, because in those two areas there's always catch-up work to do, and it would be beneficial to the department as well as the employee to do it that way. We don't argue that the people aren't being paid holidays. The deputies haven't been paid holidays since 1995. This was our way of trying to address what the county board asked us to do in our savings, while at the same time keeping the overtime that everybody in corrections was used to. And this was our balance to try and meet that measure. The 5-2-4-2 does have the employees working approximately 2,016 hours a year, and they're paid for 2,016 hours a year. The normal year is about 2,080 hours.
When this was brought in front of this committee, we asked the same questions. I guess I believe everybody was aware that there was going to be some weeks where there would be short 8 hours, and I think even the sheriff was here and he explained that jailers would have the ability to get overtime and or to get caught up. The only question I really have is regarding the concern of these 10 holidays, because it sounds as if the jailers and everybody else previously received 10 days of holiday, and now with this 5-2-4-2, it's gone?
They're still getting 8 of the 10 days off. They're just not getting paid for them. The deputy sheriffs in 1995 went to a 5-2-5-3 schedule, and they don't get paid holidays either. They get paid for the days they worked, and the days that they don't work, they don't get paid for. So there are no paid holidays in the Deputy Sheriff's Association. There haven't been any since 1995. So this is very similar to a schedule that the deputy sheriffs have had since 1995, when they gave up the 6-2 schedule that they were working back then, where they had the holidays and the floating days that the correctional guards had last year. So all we've done is we didn't move them to a schedule that doesn't have paid holidays, but that isn't breaking. It's breaking from what the Correctional Guards had, but it's now in line with what the deputy sheriffs have had for the last 15, 16 years.
Supervisor Singer?
I don't disagree with you that if that's the way to go, then maybe we should be doing that. But I don't remember you saying that at the meetings that you weren't going to pay them holidays, that there was going to be a change, that we were going to change like the deputies where they will not get paid holidays. I didn't hear that. Maybe I didn't hear it at the meeting. Maybe it wasn't at the meeting. Maybe it was. I just don't understand why it wasn't explained to us then.
My guess would be that because the deputy sheriffs have been doing it so long that we didn't really see it as much of a change. We just saw it as moving everybody to that particular schedule at that time. And it didn't occur to us that it would be such a significant change that it would cause this issue.
Well, excuse me, but you don't get holiday pay either, right?
I do, because I work a 5-2 schedule.
Okay, but wouldn't you be upset if you didn't get paid your holiday pay?
When the deputy sheriffs went to the schedule in 1995, I was in that particular group that went from a 6-2 to a 5-2-5-3, and I didn't get paid out.
If you're in that group, you understand you're in the group. But if you're not in that group, you don't understand why you're not getting unemployed, you're not getting holiday pay, and that's why we've got all these people here tonight.
Right. And the unique thing in this, and basically, as stated in the documentation you've given us, this is on a trial basis, and basically, it's pretty much for this year set in stone because it's part of our budget. And to modify anything, we'd have to come up with generate revenue to pay for the extra vacation days.
What I will say from the perspective of, because it's the sheriff's plan, what I can say is that we haven't really had an opportunity to analyze it. We haven't even done a quarter of it.
Right.
I can't say it with confidence, and I wouldn't rely on anyone other than the finance division to tell us how we are doing in accomplishing the amount of money that is designed to be saved by implementing this schedule. And so because we're just now coming into the first quarter, I'm guessing that future committees could ask for and receive that kind of analysis. And so I hesitate to say how we're doing. I can't. I would have to come back with that information.
Right. And it's unique because when this committee dealt with our budget, this was a hot issue, and we asked, there was a representative from the union that was in the audience, and that individual stated that everybody was in agreement with the schedule because this committee really didn't tear into it regarding bring out a calendar or did this, and this, because basically that's not our job. We look at it from the standpoint of, you know, cost effective. It's allowing us to be able to pay our jailers overtime because, as stated earlier, one of the major concerns was if we went into the 171 hours and 28 days, the concern that jailers would not
be recollection getting, and again, I think all of you were that that the jailers that night were passionate about wanting the same overtime, which was overtime over 40 hours,
right?
Which is permitted under FLSA, of course. And action was taken to make that happen. And then I think it was that night that the sheriff stood up and said, "I'll find the money elsewhere. Give the jailers what they're asking for."
And another thing I would bring up is, while we didn't come out and say point blank that the correctional guards wouldn't be getting holiday pay, the sheriff, at all his meetings with the correctional guards, made a specific point of letting these people know that, you know, where last year they had to plug their holidays in somewhere, that there would no longer be holidays floating out there for them to have to worry about plugging it in, that they would know every day off that they would have through the whole year. They could look at their schedule, and other than their benefit days, they would know every day off. Just to let you know how it worked, in 2011, you would get 10 floating holidays a year, which means you would get that, the correctional guard would have the opportunity to place that day on a day he was or she was working, and they would be able to take that day off with pay. the sheriff was very specific in letting him know that there would no longer be any holiday days out there floating around. So if you don't have a holiday day to replace the day you're working, I don't know where you would think you would get that extra money from.
When you talk about the sheriff's deputies that gave, in 1996, they gave up their holiday, how much did you get for it back then to do that? You had a union, right?
Yes,
so
sir.
When you gave that up, how much did you get for it?
They got extra days off a year. And we had to come in 15 minutes extra early a day.
But you paid for it. You got something extra for giving it up, right?
And
the point I guess I'm making is that you got something for giving it up. Well, look, I don't know what anybody else did. We don't have 50 people sitting in this room because what the sheriff told them was just clear to them. Okay, so evidently the sheriff didn't get his message across very well. So we're sitting here with something that, quite frankly, I guess I get it now. That's what happened. But they got shortchanged here. So we balanced the budget in Madison on their backs.
I won't argue that point.
Yeah, okay. So I think at some point we're going to have to do something about this, because this isn't right.
Supervisor Austin.
I'd like to comment, you know, for the people that are here, the jailers. Okay, if I was a jailer, okay, this board cannot do anything this year on this, because it's already a budget, okay? If I was you, and you felt like you got really raked over the coals, I would be at every meeting, I'd be at every county board, I'd take my 5 minutes, and I'd speak and speak and speak. The more I do it, the more you'll probably get, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, okay? And I would just hammer it and hammer it till you can say, hey, I did everything I could to try and better myself. You know, this is going to be a burden on the taxpayers. They're going to have to raise taxes or do some budget modifications. Somehow they're going to have to get the money. But if you really feel as, you know, we're elected officials, you vote us, okay? You vote your representative in to represent you guys. It's the only thing I can say. We can't do nothing this year because it's on a trial basis. And Act 10 did away with your rights. That was nothing we could do either. But you can still voice your opinion month after month after month until either you wear it out and you say, I did everything I could. That's all I can say.
Supervisor Singer?
I guess I'd like to have a report from Bob when he talks to Dave where it shows in the budget that we eliminated holidays for the jail.
I think it's this. Wasn't this part of the budget?
Yeah, the change, remember there were two phases to this. There was the interim policy change, and that was the July and August meeting that I was referencing.
Right.
We came back in at the budget and reintroduced the 171.
But the 171 is overtime.
Right.
That's what we're
and
talking
that was
about.
Changed.
Overtime. Not holidays, overtime.
But it's their whole schedule.
But it's their whole schedule because the money that was proposed to be saved from the overtime change then was saved as a result of the sheriff's other proposals. And so 5242 and that language was put in the budget, or it was put in during the budget when the policies were passed.
I'd like to see that where it shows us in the budget.
Yeah.
I'd like to see where it is in the budget. We eliminated the holidays.
I was very vocal when we passed those interim policies. And I was very hesitant to do it because I was afraid that they would become permanent, because I was concerned about the employees being treated fairly. And now my concerns have shown to bear out that employees haven't been treated fairly. Because I don't also remember learning about the loss of the 10, you know, paid holidays through that whole process. I remember them coming back up in budget with the 172 or, yeah, for the overtime, then we changed that back to the 40. Anything over 40 hours in a week would be considered overtime. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we're forced into a situation where we have to come up and write instead of where we had contract governing how we interacted with our employees. We come up with the handbook. And, you know, this is how something like that gets missed. I would like to see, you know, what it is that the needs to be put back into the budget and make sure that this gets changed down the road so that, you know, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, you wouldn't have a room crowded with employees if it was fair and working right. And that was always my concern with these interim policies that became permanent policies. Was it fair? You can see that people don't know what it is. And from what I'm hearing, it doesn't look like it is. So I would just ask that we figure out what it is we need to do to rectify the situation for the next budget. Yeah, find out what that number is for the budget. You said we will have one more meeting, but you won't be here. Can we get that information by the next meeting?
Yeah. We'll let you know how it's going.
What if this, obviously this was to save money, obviously, but how much was that? What was that amount?
My recollection is it was in the 200 grand range.
What?
About 200 grand.
For the paid holidays for the jails?
Well, for the 171. Everything was driven by the amount of money that was intended to be saved. So the 7K schedule would have saved Kenosha County $180,000 in overtime, or somewhere around two, okay? For not to be quoted on that number, I'll get it solid. I'm going on memory now. And this saves that. Because the budget reduction what was part of the process in the same way that there is X number of thousands of dollars saved by moving the highway divisions over time to a federal standard. Same way that there's X number of dollars recovered by changes in the health insurance for the sheriffs. Everybody's contributing something to fill the voids.
How many employees are affected by this?
Approximately 200.
So we have 200 people not very happy, a not very good environment over there, very disgruntled people, and I'm not one to throw taxpayers' money around for $200,000 or nothing. I mean, I know somebody's going to say, oh, it's $200,000 worth, but that amount doesn't sound like, to me, like it's worth all of the, it's got to be tight over there, okay? People got to be unhappy, and that's not a good environment for a question of facility or any employee, anywhere, especially there. Not that they're just going to affect their job or anything. It's just the fact that they have morale is obviously not very good.
And I can tell you as the detention division commander that it hasn't affected their job, that they've all done a great
job.
I
didn't say that.
No, I'm just saying, but I'm saying feel, that for them.
But when this happens, they don't feel good about it, okay? And so I'm sure they didn't do their job. I never meant that. But it's got to, obviously got to be a detention over there all the time, especially when holidays are over.
It's very kind of you, Captain, to recognize that they didn't drop the ball or let this affect their performance.
No, I'm very proud to be their commander, and they're doing a great job there. And this situation in Madison hasn't helped anybody.
And I'm sure that they will continue to perform admirably throughout the rest of this year, in spite of feeling like they're being treated unfairly by the county. But let's do whatever needs to be done to make sure that we can rectify this.
Supervisor Johnson?
Well, I was just going to say, if we can't fix it now, I'm sure we can fix it in the future.
Right.
I mean, we should be able to come up with $200,000.
Well, the big thing is what I'm going to do is report back, and I'm hoping I will not be on the county board in October or November when we're talking about the budget, but I would hope that whoever the new members of this committee address that issue and address the Sheriff's Department's budget regarding the budget, that clearly it's stated in here it's a trial basis, and we need to report back on what changes could be made and how we can what we can implement to make it beneficial for everybody, and that it can be addressed at that time since it is a budgetary item. I believe that's when it's going to have to be addressed. Yeah. And I mean, as Captain Falduto and Mr. Riedel have stated, I think there should be some sort of a report or something addressing this, and we can look at it and see, you know, from the tax saving and also, you know, all the options that we have. Because this was totally implemented so that we could continue to pay time and a half for any overtime, because basically the option was, if we didn't do this schedule, we would be forcing our jailers to come in and work over 40 hours and pay them straight time. I mean, wasn't that the option?
There was 11 hours of programmed in straight time for every two pay periods before they would be able to work, before they'd be able to get paid overtime for the hours they would work.
And once again, that is a federal standard for this class of employees. It's not something we came up with.
It's interesting because it's when we address them as protective service, yet we don't consider them really protective service. So, I mean,
in this case, they're not. In our case.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
Supervisor Germano. Yeah, I just for the report, this is on a trial basis. I'd like either in the minutes to reflect or in the report when comes around for consideration of having been the trial period, and the recommendation from this committee is that this be addressed in a way that the employees are compensated for the 10. Paid holidays.
Would that be a recommendation of the county executive to put it in his budget next year?
I think that's probably the route we have to go. Because, these changes where, employees are now governed by a policy handbook as opposed to a contract and everything that's done, I'm very familiar with different areas, one of them being education, where one of the state technical schools has taken on a very punitive stance towards the employees. And I'm glad that we have not done that here, where instructors who used to get paid additional for teaching additional courses are now required to teach those courses without additional pay. So, and that's a loss, that is a huge loss of income to some families. So I'm glad that that has not been the case with the Kenosha County, and that this is a smaller incidence. I know it means a lot to all the employees that's something we can get fixed. So I appreciate your understanding.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. I appreciate it. At 7:22, the next agenda item is software presentation by Thomas Genther, Joint Services Director. Thanks, Tom, for coming. And I apologize that you were placed at the end of it.
No problem. Good evening. How are you doing? Can you do
7:22.
Get this up and running again? Thank you. Good evening. In my former life, I was a law enforcement officer, and I was never able to clear out a room that fast.
Not even with a gun?
I know. Most of the time, you kind of laugh. Anyway, I'm here this evening. I'm going to do a presentation on the public safety software that we're looking to replace. The public safety software is very complex. It's integrated throughout many agencies within the Joint Services, Sheriff's Department, Police Department. There are some significant problems with the public safety software at this point, to the point that it shuts down. There are federal mandates that are requiring us to update it in different ways. It's a very robust system. So what I'm going to try to do is explain to you what this system is, how it works, and some of the reasons why we need to replace it. And the Joint Services Board has authorized us. We have brought in a consultant a while back to look at the public safety software, to go about doing an assessment of its needs, and ultimately to send out an RFP. That RFP, request for purchase, will be sent out, will be sent out after, I believe it's presented to the board tonight.
Right. We have copies. It's pursuant to the new contracting policy, we informed you before we sent on an RFP, and I have copies if you'd like to see them.
So, We will be presenting it shortly. If you have any questions throughout the presentation, please ask. I brought with several members of my staff and Marty Lecoq. He's been helping with some of the technical ends to help to build this RFP and look at the technical aspects of it. There's Josh, who's the manager up in communications, and Rhonda, who's in records, Seb, who is in evidence ID, he's a supervisor, and Pat back there, who is in the garage. All of them are fleet maintenance. All of them are experts in their fields. And I'll try to get through this rather quickly because I know it's getting late and I think we all want to get out of here. But it is really a very complex and integrated system. Do you mind if I stand up? It's easier for me to...
Go ahead.
Okay. In the front of the room or back of the room, whatever that is there, it made a diagram. And essentially what that diagram is in bubbles, in modules, it is what the public safety software is. And there will be a slide that shows that a little bit better. But as we go through the presentation, if you look at that, you'll see how this information just continues to loop through here. It shows the different main modules of the system and how integrated the system really is. I also have a copy of the presentation. There are some very small things written in there, the different modules and submodules. You may want to refer to that as we go through that. But again, if you have any questions, please ask it, and I will try to explain them to you.
So this is going to be a proposal for updating the software that runs the entire?
Yes.
Okay. Now, is this something that is already in the CIP for future? I mean, I'm sure there's a lifespan for software for something like this. Are we putting this in the CIP so that we're allocating money for future upgrades?
This system that we're going to look at that is in place right now has been in place since 1984. Mm-hmm. The system that we're going to look to replace it with, there has not been funding allocated yet. That is something that I've discussed with the board, and I believe what will happen is once we receive the RFPs back, I mean, we do evaluate this and get some idea of what the costs are, then they will come to the county and the city and request money to be put in the CIP to fund it. So that funding will come along as we go forward with it.
But I'm sure you're not going to have the funding source.
We're probably going to end up bonding for it.
That's okay. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yes.
The county would bond and the city would give me contributions and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Supposedly, there will be.
Was there some money provided earlier for to do the study to get the RFP together? Is that something that was done before?
The study
is like a second step or something?
Right. There has been, this was part of the whole package of the transferring the dispatch to the new building.
So this is part of that. Okay.
And we allocated funds, so we knew that there was going to be issues regarding the software.
This has been going on.
Yeah, this has been going on for many years. The understanding that the software does need to be replaced, some of the problems that are inherent to it at this point, that as we go through this, I'll explain a little bit more. This is some of where we've come from. The old building, it's just kind of interesting. I had a pointer with my other one. This telephone right here, that is a direct link to the Zion nuclear plant from like 1986. If there was a meltdown there, we had the opportunity to call them or they called us to explain that there was a problem. So kind of a bad phone there. That's where we came from. I'm going to try to show you where we're going to need to go.
And hopefully somebody was on the other line.
Yes.
For good reason.
More than likely, they were driving up north real fast if there was a problem. What the public safety software is, in simple terms, the software connected between emergency responders, law enforcement, personnel, dispatch. It's specifically written and developed for records management, developing reports, entering or conducting evidentiary inventories, gathering intelligence. It helps all the agencies function within this law enforcement community. The public safety software supports the Kenosha Sheriff's Department, Police Department, Fire Department, Emergency Medical, Fire, Joint Services Employees, Citizen, Municipal, and Circuit Courts. There are over 100 different software applications that are in this public safety software. When we're talking about it, there are over 100 different applications there. Part of the study that was done by our consultant put together what is the Kenosha County Safety Communication Topology. That's the communication network that we use to communicate with our officers, with all the different systems that are there. Part of this public safety software is, again, part of this topology. If you look at this area right here, that's going to be the area we're going to talk about, and essentially that's that diagram that I have up against the wall. We're just going to continue to drill down into this. And this is the diagram I have up on the wall. These are the major modules. What is in here, and Marty could probably explain this a lot better than I can because I'm not a computer guy, not an IT person, but this is where the digital information is stored within the computer systems. Do you want to just address that real quick? Did I explain that pretty well?
Well, I would think that the only thing I can add is that this is a very complex system. There are different attributes. If you're familiar with a term of ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning, something that we have in the county, it's all of our financial systems, it's HR, it's purchasing, those type of applications are all combined. The public safety software system is very comparable to that, where we have many different applications that are supporting different facets of public safety. So,
And that's what we're going to continue to look at as we continue to drill down into this. Just to give you a couple of statistics, within this public safety software, the RMS is the records management system. There are over 13 million data elements. Anytime you put any type of image into that, it's a data element. So that's what's being loaded into there. There are over 700,000 digital records. These are records that are coming in, whether from police reports, through CAD. Last year, we processed almost 25,000 paper reports. 22 of them were offense reports, 2,000 were accident reports. The dispatch center handles over 200,000 calls a year. And then we go into the evidence area. Last year, we had over 16,000 pieces of evidence that came into our evidence area. We disposed of 930 of them. And the booking, we'll get into a little bit of the booking system as we go along. The number of people that we booked, 7,000 people were incarcerated. I believe through the jail, Janice gave us a figure of 12 or 15,000 people that were booked last year. Is that correct? So it's a substantial number of people that are going through this jail. And all of that data, at some point or another, is being entered into this public safety software system. First module we're going to look at is going to be dispatch. call comes into dispatch, and the dispatchers are entering this data into the number of submodules that are in there. If you look at them, we have street addresses, grids, geofiles. These are all the different submodules that all this data is going into, and it's constantly looping through this. Again, going back to the RMS, all this data that is entered into the computer-aided dispatch system is entered into our computers and then stored into the RMS. I'm going to try to, maybe I figured out how to work this. There we go. Excellent. I learned something. The CAD process, I'm going to try to put a little face with a function here. Calls are brought into our dispatch center, and they're entered into the CAD system. The calls are then dispatched by a dispatcher. The field units may ask for additional information, and this is all being pulled from our RMS. They may ask for warrants, any numbers of different information. Some of this information, because of the systems that we have here, are not available to the officers, and we're going to talk about that right now. the mobile unit systems, the computers that are in the squads, this is one of the most significant areas of fail within this system. This system is out of CJIS requirements. CJIS is the Criminal Justice Information System. And they could potentially shut down our access to the time system. the officers rely on this system greatly, and it's really fairly inadequate. It could be used far more as we go forward with a better system, which is really going to be able to provide the officers with much better information and provide safety for them. And the dispatchers continue to track the officers as we go along. Josh, you want to just kind of summarize some of that?
Right, so the call comes into the communication center, the call taker answers the phone. Everything that they gather has to be manually entered into the CAD or the computer-aided dispatch. That information then is transferred over to the dispatcher, who gets on the radio and physically dispatches the units over the radio, then tracks all of their movement as they arrive on the call, as they clear the call. They make all the notes in the call that the officers tell them over the radio so that there's a history for that call for service. And then once that call is complete, the officer is clear, then that all of that information that they've entered then gets transferred over to the records management system. And then any reports or anything, and they'll get more into that as that goes along, but all the reports or anything that come in behind that start with that information that's entered from the computer-aided dispatch.
You know, Josh, I have a quick question. Yes. I never asked. With the terminal that the deputy has, that information is separate from what the dispatcher, correct?
It's the information that they're seeing on that screen.
Okay.
Some of that is coming directly from the computer-aided dispatch. One of the failure points in the system is that what they're able to access on that mobile data computer is very limited. They can't see the status of units that are assigned to the call, so they don't even know which other unit. They can't see who else is attached to the call, but they can get some very basic information. They can see the location of a call for service. They can it'll give them the address. It'll give them the caller's name. So there is some information in there that they're able to see, but they're not able to see everything.
So is that a function of the application?
Yes.
So, for instance, like if this deputy is putting in a license plate number and he's running that, the dispatcher would not know that he's running that particular vehicle then, correct? Or
no, not unless if he tells them that over the radio.
Okay.
And that's part of the function of the system. That allows the officers to do a great deal of work out in the field without having the dispatchers do it, and it cuts down on some of the radio traffic. Right now, radio time is at a premium because there's so many officers out there using this system. If we lost this system, all of this, what is going on over this system, is going to have to be done over the air, and that's just going to be a disaster.
And what about the squad cams? Do those
completely separate system?
So that the dispatcher doesn't even see that then?
It is not. Yes, the separate system. There are many. That's another point. There are many other systems that are used that are not covered under the envelope of the public safety software, such as the cameras and the squads, the 911 phone system. Those are separate systems, and that is not interfaced currently into the computer-aided dispatch or the mobile data system.
So that possibly could someday.
Some vendors do some things along that line.
Okay.
Let's say I go along and I see a car alongside the road. I don't want to call dispatch. I just want to make sure it's not stolen. I just punch it up, and I'm not bothering them then. Okay. I can do that on traffic stops. I tell them where I'm at, and I give them the license plate.
Okay.
Then if I don't want to transmit anymore, I just punch it in myself. And if the guy isn't wanted or anything, or if I need something safe, then I call in and say, save that for me. Okay. And then they'll run it. It saves a lot of time.
Well, I'm just looking at it from a safety standpoint. Something happens to the officer, at least dispatch can say, this is what he was looking at, this is what went down, and, you know, to track somebody.
But see, that computer saves that. My laptop in there,
okay,
let's
so
say something happened to me.
Laptop,
yes. If something happens to me or any of them deputies, if he punches that in, that's set there.
Okay.
They'd have to take the box out and everything, I believe. Or maybe up in Madison they'd still have that, wouldn't they?
There's a complete record of all the traffic that goes over the MDC,
okay,
from the chat client to the information that's run by the officers. Yeah, there is a complete record of that. And not to get into some inadequacies of the system, but that's part of the problem with this is supervisors on the police department, sheriff's department, cannot gain access to this information. You can have problems with inappropriate information being sent across this thing. It's historically happened quite regularly across the United States. Rodney King was an example of that. And other systems allow you to check this information in real time. It is a tool that I believe is necessary for law enforcement to have.
So maybe just to clarify, there is a DVR recorder in the sheriff's vehicles, and there is as well in the KPD that records the information. The sheriff squads record that, and as they come back to base, it's uploaded into the system and maintained in case there is an issue. But it's so it is recorded and captured. So it's
once
not.
A year. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's not real time broadcasted back to a control center, and that's something that we're looking to do in the future. But right now, it is captured and recorded. So.
Once a year, I'll get something from the Department of Justice classifying. Why did you run this individual? You know, they want to make sure it's for police use only, and then I have to answer that, or they'll shut my computer down. Yes. So there's a lot of cases, you know. Something you have to keep up on that.
There is. And we'll talk a little bit more about the computers and data pursuit, which is the program which is behind it, which is causing much of this to come about. Continuing on a little bit, here's the records management system. All the submodules in purple and white, those are, again, areas that information is being recorded into, is being saved. The jail and civil process, the blue and the green at the bottom there, those are systems with that information is stored within the records management system. So again, we're looking at just the integration of the agencies that are here and the data, where it's coming from. All the data from the jail will eventually be stored into the records management system. So it's really a huge system. I'm trying to go through a little bit and put a little face for the function. This first function, every time a paper report comes into dispatch, records, it is time-stamped. It is received for records. Rhonda, do you want to talk a little bit about the time that it takes for that?
On an average daily basis, the records clerk spend 13 and a half hours a day day-stamping paper that's coming into records. On a yearly basis, that's almost 5,000 hours.
So it's not, yes. You're not doing much electronic?
No, that's just to be able to, every piece of paper that comes in, we date stamp and initial so that we know, have a record when we received it. That's before we can even get to the data entry part of it.
Okay. With other systems, most of them are digital. Reports are digital. Reports coming from the field are digital. Much of this manual procedure that's going on right now can be eliminated, and we'll be able to expedite and have a better recording of all of the reports. So it's a substantial amount of time that's taking place there.
Which paper are they receiving?
The reports that the officer writes, arrest sheets, warrants from the courts, accident reports, requests from citizens for copies of reports. Any paperwork that comes into records, especially from the departments, would be all their written reports. Witness statements after the fact, property loss forms and a burglary, all that paperwork comes into records and is stored.
So are you guys going to start scanning that, or how? I mean, it's
depending on the system. I mean, a lot of the systems now would be the report would be created on in the squad on the MVC,
okay.
And it would be electronically transferred to us, and we'd still have to review it and classify it for the Uniform Crime Reporting Report. So we would still have to look at it, but we wouldn't have to process the paper part of it.
With a field reporting module in this, the officer would be able to prepare the report in his squad. He would send it digitally to the supervisor. Supervisor would review it, approve it. They would send it digitally to records. Now all of this is typed and stamped. And what's happening now is the officer writes the report, drives to the station, walks into the building, drops it off to the supervisor, and then walks back out to his car. And if you do that as fast as possible, when you're talking 15, 20 minutes, it's a huge amount of inefficiency there. If you stop and talk to people, right, you're talking even more. With this digital system, we're going to save officer time and the efficiency will be there.
No, I like that, but the only question I have, and I don't know if the chief can answer it, I don't see the sheriff or the police chief are not here. Are officers and deputies capable of typing? I hate to say it. I know that Tom, you're a former law enforcement officer. If they have the capabilities to, so they're not spending 20 minutes, a half an hour to write a type of one-page
document?
Well, they all have to have the capability of using local data to remove this now.
Okay.
Information. However, writing reports on the PC in the squad car does take time and effort, some more than others. And there is also a downside to that, that you got here. We do it a little different than what Tom is describing. We hold, have officers hold the reports until they get to the ship, and the supervisor collects them. And we don't drive in, because we're too far out. We can't do what the city does. That's what they do. But when a squad parks and has a bit of reports in a squad car, that takes them off the road. That makes them sit off the side, and they're doing the reports in the car. So,
and I'd even like
to, the downside, but
if there's software,
it's electronically transmitted.
I mean, I know there's software out there. I don't know how good it is, where you could just, you know, speak in, and it would.
They have troubles with that because you have to interpret. Each one has to be accustomed to a
voice. To your voice, right. You're right.
So, I mean, this is the best way to do it, is what he's saying, and we wanted to do that for years, electronically transmitting. But the downside is officers do have to stop the cars. They do have to do the reports, which takes them off the road. But they have to do it when they're
right. Right. And it's nice to, I mean, as a defense attorney, it's nice to have typewritten reports, you know, that maybe you've gone through spell check, because, you know, the errors that can be made. And like you said, if you're doing at the end of the shift or whatever, sometimes you do it a little quickly. And there's errors.
Any amount of technicality there, huh?
Some of the deputies have to hide. You know, if they stop along the road to be visible, they never get nothing done. No, when they're typing reports, it's horrible. Some of them have to actually go hide, because citizens will pull up and say, hey, how are you doing, and all this. They actually have to write their reports. They have to get off the main drag so they're not being bothered. Or another deputy might see them and want to sit there and yak, and they don't get nothing done then.
That doesn't happen.
But you're out there, huh?
I'm one of the ones that usually pull up when I yak.
Just to continue a little bit with face and function, the next photograph to the right there, that is one of the evidence, or the records clerk downloading information into the computer. The file cabinets are where all of our paper reports are stored. The boxes that are on top of the file cabinets are, again, paper reports. Right now, as the reports go out, and Ronnie can talk about the time frames that are in there, we're sending those reports out to be digitized. Our budget accounts for about $36,000 a year just to send reports out to be digitized.
Can you just get on the schedule real quick?
We're able to keep 3 years in our files in records, and after the third year, to make room for the next year, we have to box them and send them out. So right now, that's a matter of, you see each one of those banker boxes, there's about 400 to 500 reports in each one. And we currently are going through every report in every box before we send it out and making sure that we're accounting for every report. So that is, you know, labor costs not figured into the $35,000 for the imaging on a yearly basis.
Okay. That's our record system. Evidence identification. Again, we look at this integration of the system. It's all being stored into the records management system. As those 16,000 pieces of evidence are being put into storage, they're being stored into here. We also have the identification part of it, the live scan, the mug-o-matic. These are all different modules that are hooked into this very large system. Just going to put a face with a function. We have a deputy putting a piece of evidence into a locker, evidence clerk taking it out of there. This is part of the process. The picture on our left is one of our rooms in the evidence facility. Those are the thousands of pieces of evidence that are being stored there. And having to be disposed of at some point or another, there are any number of laws that dictate how we're going about keeping that stuff in there. The next picture is the live scan, the booking station. Just got done talking a little bit about the live scan. Seth, you just want to summarize that for us real quick?
Yes, we still do manual fingerprints for people like teachers, nurses, and civilians, like the concealed carry, especially over the last year. That's a little table right in the front left. What was presented before was electronic fingerprint live scan. It's just all the way on the right, and you can kind of see the monitor there. That is the physical station of where the people would be taking their electronic fingerprints, and that goes into a store and forward system, what is currently referred to as now, in a different room where all the fingerprints are kept for daily, and then the next morning we submit them to NIBS, which then gets submitted to the FBI.
The records management system within the Cisco system is not that robust. We could certainly use a much better system, which would allow us to manage the evidence much better than we currently are, to continue with this disposal system. The jail system, again, these are all the different modules, sub-modules that are in there. The information that is gathered in the jail is just immense. We're talking about the prisoner to come in there, what cell they're in, the medication, if they can be with somebody, can't be with somebody. It's a substantial amount of information. And eventually this, again, integrates into the whole public safety software system to where we are storing it, and it becomes accessible to different people within the building, within the organization.
Now, is this the same software when a jailer hits the button to open a door also? I mean, is this part of the same system, like a detention center, or is this different?
I don't believe so.
No.
Oh, that's a separate system.
Yes, that's a security system.
Okay.
Yeah, that's having to do with the jail, the documentation, the record system.
No, but is this part of this whole, that's part of the, no?
That's
okay.
A separate system.
Okay.
This system, JAMS, is more the booking, the clothing that the person has, what cell they're going to be in, medication, all the information about the specific prisoner. Just real quick, form of function, here's the booking station, and if you hear that clank behind you, that's a bad thing. Fleet maintenance, it's pretty much a standalone system at this point. Again, we could certainly use a far better inventory system, a better system to account for what's going on there. Just put a little face for the function again. Here they're installing the computer, the MDC. This is all the equipment on the left that is in the trunks of the car, and that is need to be very flexible to be a mechanic in the garage with fleet maintenance, putting all this stuff into the trunk, because that's what they do. Pat, do you want to need to comment then?
Aside from all the maintenance and upkeep of the fleet of law enforcement vehicles, we also ready those vehicles for law enforcement use. That's the installation of all the equipment you and that's that you see before you on the screen. We track and maintain a fuel site and fuel management, the parts inventory, and everything associated with the inventory of fleet of vehicles.
You can see it's a very large system, very robust system. Now I'm just going to go through some of the problems with it and where we're moving today. The mobile data system, that computer, is out of CJIS requirements. The CJIS is Criminal Justice Information System. It's run by the FBI, I believe. And that's, and potentially they could shut this down on us. It would be a very bad thing because of the encryption, because of where we are with this thing.
But if they would shut it down, what would happen is basically a deputy or police officer would be at a scene and they wouldn't be able to do anything from their module in the car, so the dispatcher would be compounded. It would take a substantial amount of time and additional work to the dispatchers, correct?
Yes, it would require us to need more man hours upstairs.
Because you'd be doing basically everything that the
officer... Every time they run a license plate, every time they run a name that they need to check, they would have to then do that over the radio through the dispatch center.
Okay.
The time system, how the officers run somebody for see their ballot, that could be shut down in the MDCs. Data pursuit, that software that runs that MDC program, it is very unstable. It shuts down on an average of once a day. What happens is the IT has to go and reboot this thing. We have supervisors from the Sheriff's Department, Police Department, who have to go and reboot it to get this thing working again. It is a significant problem. There is no fix in sight. We got this system from some people down in Florida. They're not going to upgrade it, so there is no fix in sight for this system. It's taken us a long way. We didn't have this previously, or it wasn't as efficient. So it's taken us a long way, but it needs to be replaced at this point in time.
So if I could just maybe add a comment to it. I think that everyone has heard about Two Guys in a Garage. That's Data Pursuit. So it was an initiative that Two Guys came up with, our development system, and the county and the city has been able to take advantage of that for free over the past, how many years? I'm not sure, a lot.
Like 10 years,
but
substantial, because right. Services are safe.
So, you know, good for us. We've been able to parlay this and do well. The other thing is that there were other issues associated with CGIS that the county has gone ahead and addressed with two-factor authentication and other issues that things that are in our control that we can fix, we've done. So we've addressed a number of issues other than the encryption issue with Data Pursuit. So
Marty, the county is going to continue to give support to joint services then? I mean, through your department, the IT department?
Yes. It's kind of a, you know, it's a joint responsibility. So some of the things that we do with things that we're doing with two-factor authentication to Active Directory to some of the email systems, those are things that the county supports. For the city, they have a similar initiative that's going on to support those as well. But yeah, we are continuing to support the Sheriff's Department in some of these issues.
Just to continue real quick, the present system does not have field-based reporting, and there's limited access to the RMS from that computer in the car. That the officers cannot get a substantial amount of information. They can get some. This is some of what we've done up to this point. The application is highly customized, so while it has been designed to meet many of our needs, to update it takes a substantial amount of time. We're talking months to update the different number of modules there. And each time we move to update, you have to have the same number of months to rebuild this whole program right back in there. It's not like your home computer where you take the disk and you update Word, whatever, to Word 7. This takes 9 and 12 months to update these different modules, the different versions that are in there. So it takes a substantial time. The system is underutilized. It's difficult to use. There's a lack of training. The CAD system, it's our radio system. Number of things. I think the most important one here is the next generation, 911. We don't even know what some of this is at this point of time. What it is, the federal government is mandating that we have the ability to do certain things with the technology that we have out there that is emerging. The Twitter, the Facebook, the texting, the videos that are coming from people's cameras. Right now, many of that stuff is going to dispatch centers. We need to be able to store this, to pass it on. Some places have that ability, some places don't. We currently don't have this. We're not even sure what all of this legislation, what all of this is going to become when it comes our way. But it is coming our way, and if we don't address it, the current system doesn't meet this at all. If we don't address it with a new system, what we have now with Data Pursuit, we're going to have with next generation 911 in a fairly short time. Josh, you just want to, you're much more versed on it than I am.
Right now, they're creating some standards out there to say this is what you're technological standpoint. This is what type of software, this is what type of programming you need to have to be able to accept this data and be able to transfer this data that you've received to other 911 centers, out to field units and such. And we're talking about texting, pictures. The whole idea behind this is that no matter where you're at, if you're texting, if you're on Facebook, if you dial up 911. you should get to your 911 center and get help from where you need it. Right now, it doesn't work. If you try to text 911, nothing will happen. It will go nowhere in Kenosha County. And we know that this is all coming down the road. We know all of these things are coming. Like I said, they've already developed some of the standards. They've got some transitional standards already in place to say this is what you need to meet. And we know that our current system will not do it. Our current phone system won't handle it, and the CAD system will not handle it. So we know we're going to need to be replacing both of those items at some point in the future to be able to maintain, to keep up with these things that are coming. But we're looking at things like somebody's outside of a let's say you witness a shooting. You take a picture of the suspect. You could potentially then send that picture to the 911 center, who could then disseminate that to the responding officers. Obviously, right now we do everything through trying to get descriptions from the caller and everything else, but that's kind of where this is headed, and that's what they're looking at a national level, looking at trying to get in place that people will be able to take advantage of in the future. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about next generation.
But we're in the same predicament as the other counties throughout Wisconsin, correct?
Currently,
this is the same issue. That
currently, there are some counties that have CAD systems that would meet those standards. Or have 911 systems that would meet those standards. The infrastructure at the state level and with the telephone companies is not in place at this point. Obviously, there's going to be some funding issues when those things come along, but there are other states in the union that do it, that are at that level, dealing with these next generation 911s and are already accepting the texting and accepting pictures and accepting information directly from alarm companies and those types of things. So it's within the next year or so, no, there's not going to be anything that comes down to set, because the state of Wisconsin's kind of behind the curve on some of these things. But it is coming. We know it is coming, and it's coming down the road, not too in the too distant future.
Proper functionality of the public safety software is critical to public safety and officer safety, and I think that's obviously at most all of our minds. Where we are today. The communication study identified gaps and needs. The consultant identified there were problems with the public safety software and recommended that it be replaced, and it be replaced in a system that's completely integrated. We have since put together the RFP, and we'll be talking about sending that out. The current Kenosha Joint Services Public Safety software does not meet current needs. The mobile data system is at risk. The system is inefficient. Similar scenarios will play out from data pursuit to next generation 911, and as much as practical and reasonable, there needs to be an integrated system. We need to give our employees the tools to do the job appropriately. Next up, so this is what we've done up to this point. We determined needs and specific requirements. We did a need assessment that was through all the agencies that are involved in this, Sheriff's Department, Police Department, Joint Services, all the different departments within Joint Services. We determined what our needs were. And then we had a draft of the RFP. We invited suggestions and comments on the draft, established a vendor list, we prepared a final RFP, and we have an evaluation committee that is put together. It's representative of the various agencies that do interact with this whole system. Marty's on there. There's an IT person from the city. Chuck, myself, somebody from the police department are all on this evaluation committee. And next step. Those are other steps that will come along as we continue with this process. That's pretty much my presentation. And Carol, do you want to address the RFP?
We are set to send out the RFP. I'm just giving you notice that we're doing that, and that is with our new contracting policy. Even though this is a joint services project, they have asked for the county's help in running the RFP, so we're going with the county's processes on that. So if you'd like to have a copy of the RFP, you're more than welcome to have it. It still is in a draft form. It says draft on it, so you shouldn't release it to the public yet.
So we have a timeline in place there for vendors to put their proposals forward, to evaluate them. All of that is in the RFP, as you'll see.
Who's going to review the RFP?
There's a committee.
Evaluation committee that's comprised of Joint Services, the county, the city.
So all the agencies will be involved in the evaluating of these?
They are all represented. There's a representative from the fire department, the sheriff's department, police department, Marty, city IT, myself,
Carol is on there to help us facilitate the whole thing. So that, yeah, there is this whole public safety community has some involvement in that in one way or another.
You indicated that there were systems and some things that haven't been established yet. How do we address those?
Some of that is in this next generation 911, and we do know some of what we need to address. There are some regulations that are put out by the federal government. Right now, our systems do not address it. In the RFP, it will say that, it does say, that we need technology that is going to be able to address some of the regulations that are fostered by next generation 911. There are some minimum understanding.
I can address that a little bit. There's a national organization called National Emergency Number Association, NENA. They're actually at the forefront of setting the standards for this. And they work with several of these vendors too. So basically like open source almost programming so that people, and the whole idea behind it is just sharing, being able to share the data. And that's why they already have several transitional standards already in place, and so there's some specific things out there we can say you need to meet this with your software if we're going to look at you, so that when these things come down the road, it'll be able to handle the changes that need to be made.
Chief, since you're here, was there any issues or anything that's from the Sheriff's Department that this committee should be aware of regarding the software?
I think this committee is not what I think people deal with software pretty much know what my viewpoint is.
Okay.
I don't think anybody wants to hear anything.
Okay.
However, I will say that the agency number two is that the system has worked well for me in many years. I understand the need. I agree with replacing the public data system. It sucks. It really does. And it needs an interesting improvement to be done. So the committee will look at the results of the RFPs when we come back and see if all the needs are met. The Sheriff's Department has a stake in most of the system because we deal with more than anybody else does with the system. We deal with not only records, but jail patrol, but we have jail, we have civil process. We've got a large stake in this, so we want to make sure it works for everybody. So that's our major concern.
I don't know, Captain Falduda, you. Regarding dispatch, I know you've done a lot of work with the towers and
4.9.
Yeah, the 4.9. I mean, is there anything that regarding this software that you?
No, I would echo what the chief said. The current data pursuit will not work with the 4.9. So if we're going to get the best bang for a buck out of the 4.9, we need to move forward with working with the. Replacing the MDC browser and the CAD software so that there's better communications between dispatch and the squad cars. And then the rest of it will be evaluated as it comes in, and we'll determine if that meets our needs.
So, could I make a comment, Chairman? So we've got a number of different projects that we're doing for public safety. One is the 4.9. public communication system. We're doing a fiber project that the county board is, you know, both of these the county board has approved and we're moving forward with. We're talking about a public safety software system, you know, sponsored by Joint Services. Probably what we'll see in the future is another project that comes up about the 911, the switch, the system that actually receives its calls and what we do there. So we've got a number of different things that are going on. It's clear that we can't continue down the path with data pursuit. It fails to meet the requirements. It's problematic every day, and it's failing. We cannot encrypt it, so we have to make a change. The county implementing the 4.9 system, that's a new interstate or highway that we can pass traffic through, data traffic through. So whatever the solution is that we identified for the public safety software can run over that highway. And so that's, you know, we're in a good position to do that. So there's a lot of things a lot of moving parts in this, and I think we're working well to get our arms around it.
And Joint Service has done an excellent job. I mean, initially just moving the dispatch from the first floor up to where it is now in the penthouse of the safety building, and I think Joint Service did an excellent job of the move. I mean, people, I don't think a lot of people realize what went on with the move, and Joint Service did an excellent job. There was no lost calls, no major issues or anything. I mean, that was a major move, and I think it went down well, and I think that was just the beginning. And I truly believe that Joint Service has headed down the right path, and it's, we're getting in a new age, and we're doing a great job. So I want to commend you. I want to commend the employees from Joint Services that did come for this presentation. I think it was very educational. I think it's something that I don't know if I'll be involved with or some of the other members of the county board, but I think it's headed in the right direction, and I just want to commend you on what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any additional questions by any youth or by any supervisor?
I just want to make a comment that I wouldn't term the 911 area as a penthouse. Okay. Even though it is high.
If you talk to some of the people who don't have windows in their office, they think that it's a penthouse within our organization.
But hey, I was where it used to be, and now where it is. I mean, it's a substantial improvement. I think the employees are very grateful for it. I mean, it was like a closet. I mean, it was.
Well, you should have seen years ago when it was down in the basement, and you had to ask for records. The deputies had to do it. You know, if you wanted a copy of something, you had to go and file cabinet. You know, it was amazing.
You should have seen what it was the old jail.
Yeah. One holding tank. You brought a guy in about when the other officer was going to get off, you got swore at and everything else because you had to work overtime.
Where did Joint Services come in? I was on the board when we did it. Were you on the board when we did it?
1982.
Yeah, that was it'll never happen again in 40 years.
I don't think so. No comment.
I don't know. For some reason or other, it was like, I think Serpy and Chandrioli and we got along for 1 year, I think.
Well, we'll continue along. Any other business allowed by law at 8:12? Hearing none. Is there
adjourned?
Been moved. Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
It's adjourned. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cole, how's it going?
Not too bad.
Good.
Yeah, I'll be here.
He had a great time.
Yeah. You scared me with that. I thought we were here all night.
Trying to be prepared. You guys look like they had a big...